Welcome to the Kindle Chronicles, a Friday podcast all about the Kindle. My name is Len Edgerly, and this is episode 48 on Friday, June 19, 2009. I'm at home today in downtown Denver, three blocks from the AT&T store, where I walked with my lawn chair this morning at 4:40 a.m. to be first in line to buy an iPhone 3GS. The second Apple nutcase showed up about a half an hour later, and by the time the store opened at 7, there were about 20 of us. The store manager told me that he had 40 of the new iPhones available. And that turned out to be enough for my very sane wife to amble down the street well after the sun came up and also get her iPhone. They look great. We both opted for the white version this time. They are noticeably faster with lots of new features, and I get to explore them as soon as I finish the podcast. My interview guest this week is Will Delamater, host of the EduKindle.com blog. Since his focus is Kindle use in education, I wanted to get his first impressions of the DX, and I think you'll be interested to hear his assessment from an educator's point of view. In Kindle news this week, Jeff Bezos indicated we will see additional book formats available on the Kindle, as well as Kindle content made available not just on the iPhone. We'll check on how DX sales are going, learn what happens when you drop a DX on the floor, and find out why Brigham Young University chickened out of an innovative Kindle interlibrary loan program. This week's tech tip, with a tip of the hat to Andrei Pushkin of blogkindle.com, will reveal a hidden feature of the Kindle DX that may affect your calculations on whether to take the plunge and buy one. The Kindle quote is from a very good book to which I was guided by Pastor Mark Pierce, a listener who left an audio comment, which I'll play near the end of the show. You can subscribe to this podcast at the iTunes or Zune stores, or by going to the show notes page, which is thekindlechronicles.com. With that, let's turn to this week's Kindle news. There was lots of coverage this week of comments that Jeff Bezos, the CEO of Amazon, made at a conference in New York on Monday on disruptive business models. It was sponsored by Wired Magazine. What Bezos said that everyone was talking about is that the hardware business and the ebook store he sees as separate businesses. One quote he had was, "The device team has the job of making the most remarkable purpose-built reading device in the world. We are going to give the device team competition. We will make Kindle books at the same $9.99 price points available on the iPhone and other mobile devices and other computing devices." I'm quoting from a story here in Bits from the New York Times. He mentioned that there would be other formats available for the Kindle. He didn't mention any specific ones. EPUB would be the one I'm sure a lot of people would like to see on the Kindle. He also said that he didn't see any reason to go to a subscription model for the Kindle, similar to what cell phones are sold by you, like what we did with the iPhone today, is you get a two-year subscription and you get a dramatically discounted price. Bezos says, "My opinion, and so far the market has responded to our approach, is very simple. Instead of driving the cogitative complexity of a two-year commitment," that's quite a word, "tell people this is the actual cost of the device." He thinks he's got a winning strategy. It's hard to argue with him. He pointed out again that 35% of the sales of all titles available on both Kindle and paper formats are going to the Kindle. And he, this article concludes with a quote in which he says, "We humans do more of what's easy. If you lower friction, you always get more of what's easy. On the Kindle, you can think of a book and have it 60 seconds later. That is driving book sales." Now, you know, they've said before that there would be Kindle content available on other smartphones, perhaps other devices, but I think the reason everybody picked up on this is it's the first time that Bezos had actually sort of shown his hand on his strategic vision of how the hardware part of the business and the content part of the business are going to operate going forward. Gizmodo picked up the same article in a piece titled, "Jeff Bezos Wants Amazon Ebooks on More Devices, Kindle to Fend for Itself." How are DX sales going? Well, we had an indication, this is from Channel Web, first batch of Amazon Kindle DX sells out in 3 days. And this is an article on June 15th, and it said that, noted that on the Kindle site, they weren't available until June 17th, 2 days after that. And if you look at Amazon this morning, You find that the in-stock date has extended even further out into the future to June 26. Now, of course, the question is how many did they make? And maybe they just didn't make enough, but given how well they were able to keep up with the high demand for the Kindle 2, you'd think they would have made plenty of DXs, and even so, they're in the problem of not having enough to satisfy the demand. There was an item I saw in Gizmodo, as also in some other places, and it's a video, which I'll have a link to in the show notes, kind of a scary video of a Kindle DX being dropped 30 inches, and you get to see it in very slow motion as it tumbles to the floor and bounces and apparently survives. It does feel like a pretty sturdy device, but, you know, very similar to the Kindle 2, but being heavier, I suppose it goes faster when it's falling even 30 inches, and it would hit the floor with a pretty good bounce, and according to this video, it would survive. Last item in news comes from the Deseret News in Utah. BYU's Harold B. Lee Library is suspending a short-lived pilot program using Amazon.com's electronic book, The Kindle, as a substitute for interlibrary loans. This is an interesting case. Apparently, BYU got verbal permission to proceed with the program to let people borrow books from the library using the Kindle. They quote the communications manager for the library as saying, "We are playing it safe. Two people here said we have verbal permission, but if we don't have it in writing, that's a different thing. We don't want to do anything that Amazon doesn't completely agree with." Under this program, when a faculty member at BYU requested a book that was not part of the library's collection but was available in the Kindle format, the library purchased a digital copy of the book from Amazon and downloaded it onto one of 9 Kindle devices the library owns to lend. They were trying this out kind of quietly, but the problem was it got picked up in a story in the library journal. Somebody got very excited about it, saying, "Hot dog, someone has started a much-needed plan to get ebooks part of the interlibrary loan program." But with that publicity, BYU got a little spooked, and they withdrew the program. The quote was, "We are not comfortable doing the thing until Amazon is 100% behind it." So this gray area of, is Amazon willing to let libraries loan Kindles, or does that violate the terms of use, is apparently still gray, and enough so that a library that was actually trying it, BYU, decided to back off. This week's tech tip reminds me of those 800 number TV ads you used to see, or that are probably still on, for the slice and chop and do everything kitchen appliances. After a dizzying list of features, the fast talking announcer would say, "And it's a can opener." Well, via Andrei Pushkin of his blog Kindle blog, I can make a similar pitch for the Kindle DX, which can read books, newspapers, native PDFs, do text-to-speech, flip its screen content to landscape mode, and it's a calculator. It turns out Andrei discovered this Easter egg by accident when he was searching for something and inadvertently included some arithmetic operators. When he pressed the 5-way controller to select Search My Terms, the search result added an equal sign with the calculated result. I confirmed Andre's finding that this does not work on the Kindle 2 running version 2.0.3 of the operating system, but if you have a DX, it does work, and this is how you do it. Go to the home screen on your DX and begin typing a mathematical expression, such as 35 times 67. The times is the asterisk, and you don't need to put an equal sign at the end, although you can if you want to. The result will show up with 2 equal signs. To find the asterisk sign, you press the symbol key on your keyboard, which is marked SYM, and then use the 5-way controller to go up one row and over 4 columns, then press the 5-way when you reach the asterisk, which is the sign for multiplication. Once you have your mathematical expression in the search field, you press on Search My Items. In the case of this example, you will see search results, all one item at the top of the screen, and your expression will now have an equal sign added along with the answer, 2,345. Andre found that the calculator function seems to support the following operations: basic math, plus, minus, multiplication, division, power, that's the caret sign if you want to say something cubed or to the fourth power or whatever, and square root. The last one, square root, is performed by typing in the search box SQRT and then in parentheses the number that you want to find the square root of. It also, amazingly, does trigonometry functions well beyond my recall from high school. And if you divide by zero, if you divide a number by zero, it produces a delicate little infinity sign that is so light that, in font that it's difficult to read. So if you've been on the fence about purchasing a DX, this unheralded capability might well decide the matter for you. In addition to having an encyclopedia and a dictionary on board, you now will be able to check any suspicious-looking math without ever leaving your chair, plane, seat, or bed. Thanks very much to Andrei Pushkin for this week's tech tip. Be sure to check out his blog at blogkindle.com. He has consistently useful and technologically sophisticated and well-researched information about the Kindle. You can learn more about his Kindle projects by listening to the interview that I did with Andrei on episode 42 of this podcast, which was released on May 8, 2009. Time now for our interview. Will Delamater was a high school English teacher and principal for many years before joining the publishing industry. He has been a passionate Kindle user since March of 2008, and he created a blog designed to provide information and tools to enhance the Kindle experience, especially for school executives, teaching professionals, school board members, and anyone else with an interest in using the Kindle for teaching. I saw that he had purchased a Kindle DX, so I was eager to get to talk to him about a device that Amazon sees as especially well-suited for textbooks. I caught up with Will by Skype at his home in Maryland on June 17th, the day after his DX arrived. I began by asking his first impressions.
Really, my true first impression is that it starts to approach being like a slate, you know, a learning slate. I don't know if you saw the new Star Trek, but, you know, that whole idea that you walk around with all your information
right,
on something
right.
that's as thin and cool as the Kindle DX. And, it really reminds me of that. Your comments in your first review of it last week, it is a little heavy.
Mm-hmm.
I can see it as not being real comfortable to try to hold. And despite the fact that I don't eat oatmeal for breakfast, I encountered kind of the same thing. It really hit me a little bit. What about these buttons only on the right-hand side? You know, there's a certain artistry, I think, with my Kindle Ones that get into with hitting that previous page or advancing the page from either side of the Kindle, not really having to press that hard. It's, almost more of a bump that, I've always called them kind of flippers, bump that flipper and it
they
advances
are like flippers
the page.
In an arcade game.
Exactly. Clearly, you're not going to make nearly as many mistaken page turns or hit the back button in error the way that this thing is designed. But I don't know, is it the same on the Kindle too, where these buttons they press to the inside?
Yeah, that was a big change.
That you've got to press to the inside. You don't press on the outside of the button.
That probably helps with fewer accidental advancings of the page.
Yeah.
So yeah,
absolutely.
Well, how about in thinking about, as you held it and you started using it, could you picture a high school student or a college student really using it as a replacement for textbooks?
I can see that. I have to say that the Amazon's advertising pictures look better to me than anything I've been able to get the thing to do. The ones on the Amazon site where those charts and graphs just look like they're diving off the page and everything. Some of the PDF textbook-like things that I've been playing around with, they really show up kind of light on the screen. The figures, for example, I'm always trying to look at geometry books because I figure, if an e-reader can handle all of the lines and, all of the chart-like capabilities of a high school geometry textbook, then you're getting to something that you could really use as a textbook. And, it's like, unless those lines are thick enough, they kind of get a little pixelated or granulated or something on the page.
Interesting.
But, you know, you're talking to a guy who the first time he saw the Kindle One said, this is going to be it. You know, this is going to work. And, you know, I was thinking in talking to you about it. And, you know, to me, I still feel like we're a little bit in the, like the days of the early telephone or something.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, the reception isn't all that great, and you know, you got to crank the thing and, you know, shout at the top of your lungs. But it's a miraculous advancement above anything that there ever was, because you couldn't talk to your aunt in Iowa without. Mm-hmm. So, yes, the promise is certainly there. I don't think that this is going to be the textbook, ultimately the textbook machine, but the pace that Amazon's developing and the pace that everybody else is developing, it is not going to be long before we're going to see something that is, you know, really handles the graphical elements more than anything else really, really, really well.
Yeah, and I think just for them to get it ready to try this early was smart, because the Plastic Logic is apparently coming early next year, which looks like a lot nicer machine with a touchscreen and everything. But, you know, they're going to be out there on some campuses creating a lot of buzz and just staying one step ahead of everybody else, perhaps.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things about that, this project that they're doing with the universities, when they made their announcement and everything, I thought I would check in with my old alma mater, Princeton University, and see what they're up to. And, you know, they just got the machines. It's just early, early days. But the fascinating thing, we've seen this get started already. What they're really focusing on, it's at Princeton, and this seems to be the case at the University of Virginia and some of these other schools, but at Princeton, it's very clear that the funding for this is coming from a sustainability grant.
Right, it's a foundation that's separate from the school, right?
Yeah, exactly. It is, you know, they say that one of the prime factors in this pilot were patterns of printing on campus. I don't know if you'd seen this information, but it really kind of blew me away. Statistics show that students are not reading digital articles and book selections on their computer screens, but rather downloading the same files again and again and printing them multiple times in the course of a semester.
Good grief.
Last year at Princeton, 10.5 million sheets of paper were used in campus computing clusters.
Wow.
5,000 trees. And I think you and I both, having, you know, been with our Kindles, you know, from the early days, you know, there's all kinds of reading that formats up beautifully for the Kindle that doesn't have to be a PDF with a textbook with a color illustration or a full motion animation or anything like that. You know, when I'd sit at the first meeting of a class and the professor would mention the reserve reading that was going to be over at the library, I mean, I would sit in the back of the room so I could get over there first because, you know, you knew if you didn't, you're going to get a packet that wasn't proper, you know, all the pages weren't there or anything like that. This seems to be a primary goal, not textbooks, not even necessarily public domain texts from Gutenberg or anything, but simply cutting down on the 10.5 million sheets of paper that students are printing out because their course, you know, an article by Len Edgerly about whatever, you know, is assigned as a supplemental reading for this course. So I go to the campus computing cluster and I fire it up and I go, you know what, I'm not going to sit here and read this thing. Hit print.
Yeah, yeah.
And then guess what? Where did I leave my backpack? Okay, this thing's online. Hit print. I mean, when I read that, I thought, of course, this is a much bigger problem that these guys are facing than can I get a textbook properly, formatted.
Now, did you have a chance to talk to anyone at Princeton? You said that the machines have already arrived.
Well, the gal, Janet, can't quite remember her last name. Yeah, she said they haven't, you know, they haven't really dug into it yet. So we're going to, you know, we're going to stay in touch over the next couple of months. Because, you know, what I'm really interested in are things like, I've been in touch with a woman out in the Seneca, Illinois schools, Kathy Parker, who they just got their Kindle 2s, you know, really literally 2 or 3 weeks ago, their Kindle 2s came in. And one of her questions was, okay, so I have all these Kindles, they're on my account, what do I name them? You know, because I'm sure your Kindles, yeah, when you fire it up, says Len's Kindle.
With my phone number on it.
Right, exactly. And your wife's Kindle comes up and it has her name on, yeah, it and everything. But so what you've got is the administrative problem, huh, of how do I, these are now school district Kindles that I need to keep track of what's on what, you know, what book is on which Kindle.
Wow.
She was going through a lot of questions about, oh, are they going to let the kids take them home or not? What are the issues around earbuds for the text-to-speech, which she sees as a big, you know, they're going to use it with students who struggle with reading, and they want to use that text-to-speech. But, you know, what do we do about earbuds and sanitation and everything else? I mean, these are the kind of administrative problems that actually do just, you know, kind of grab my interest as a school principal for a number of years. I, you know, these are exactly the considerations that you have to have.
How about the one that you talked about when we talked last in December, that Granite Public Schools in the Salt Lake area? Have you heard any more about their experiment? I think they were buying 150 of them fairly early on. How did that turn out?
I haven't gotten any more information back from Jim Henderson about that. But, you know, as far as I know, that really truly was the first thing that, the first pilot that hit the news. And they were doing a little bit like what Kathy's doing, splitting them between teachers and kids, but going to the teachers first, so that they become familiar with, you know, familiar how it works and, you know, what they could do with it with their kids. If, for example, the teachers in Seneca have now taken these all home for the summer and just going to live with them for a couple of months.
How many did they buy, do you know?
They bought, I'm going to say 40.
And this was what grade level?
Focusing primarily on middle school. Actually, matter of fact, they've got a committee at the middle school and a committee at the high school. And a little bit like North Carolina State University did, she had the teachers sign up for books that they wanted to go on to the machines. And it actually becomes a very interesting study of, you know, what people's reading tastes are and what they, you know, it's a mix of books that a teacher might like and books that kids might like. In a school setting, it's all those management issues.
Yeah, you don't even think about it. The business about what names you give them and sanitary aspects of earbuds. I mean, it strikes me that school systems that are jumping in early are going to be way down the road in handling some of those issues that other people might not even know exist before they start experimenting with it.
Absolutely. And I give Kathy a lot of credit. One of her questions was, hey, I heard I could access my Twitter account on the Kindle. And so even though the Kindle itself was like a mystery object, in fact, she wrote to me one time and said, hey, you know, this is going to kill me. I actually literally tried to turn the page yesterday. She said, that's going to take some getting used to. But, you know, so there's this mystery of this completely new device that's dropping into a really highly articulated technology world that even the teachers and administrators are really engaged with right now. You know, that's partly why I don't really know that this, I mean, the DX is definitely proof of concept. Mm-hmm. You know what? Bigger screen, we can see more at one time, the image handling is supposed to be better. Ultimately, is it really, you know, your impressions are as good as mine on that. But, you know, what it really says is, you know, this is the direction that we're going in, and there is going to be something bigger, there is going to be something better, there mm-hmm. is going to be something less expensive, there is going to be something with a touch screen, there is going to be something with Wi-Fi. There is going to be something with color. even though color and video and stuff like that just seems to me to be almost beside the point for a device that, you know, people say, why a Kindle in a world of $300 netbooks? You know, that's a great and valid question. I just really think the functions are so different that this issue of long form reading is supported by the Kindle in a way that, you know, no other electronic device supports it.
Yeah, what's ahead for your blog? Have you got any? We had that the tech tip last time on your Kindlepedia, which was a great app. Have you got any others in the works to follow the latest in your line of helpful innovations?
You know, I gotta give you a lot of credit. You are the guy in Joshua's company who actually built the Kindlepedia, a guy named Derek Kurth. Even he didn't know that Wikipedia would convert Boston Red Sox to Boston_Red_Sox.
Yeah.
I figured that out because I was looking at the logs for the Kindlepedia and I saw Boston Red Sox or W.S. Merwin even. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh my gosh, we don't have the right error message up because those won't work. So I tried it and it worked like a charm. So you figured stuff out about the Kindlepedia that the guy who wrote the script didn't even know. I've already got a request that we set it up so that it'll do other languages, and I've promised this fellow from the Netherlands who's been writing to me about it that Dutch will be the second language that we go to with the Kindlepedia. And
cool.
You know, there are a bunch of user-friendly enhancements that are coming in terms of being able to take that file and email it to yourself if you don't want to download it through the cable. I mean, I know there are a lot of issues about the Amazon terms of service with the WhisperNet delivery and everything like that. So, you know, try to stay on the right side of the law with all that kind of stuff. You know, it's amazing that people are responding to that tool for exactly the reason that I wanted to build it or have it built, is that there's so much information that I want to plunk on my Kindle and I want to read offline. I don't know if you've noticed, but the Wikipedia has integration with the DX and everything, and that's great. But I'll tell you, the formatting just isn't there. I'm sure Joshua appreciated your comment last week that these files format up really nice.
Oh, they do.
It's got the touch of Joshua talent. That's why Joshua and I have been hooked up from certainly the beginning of when I got involved, because I really believe, and that this applies to the DX and schools and the future of education in the Kindle, is if it's not formatted right, if the links aren't live, if it doesn't have a fully articulated and linked table of contents, it's really not going to work in the academic world, because you read an academic book very differently than you do a novel, and the Kindle supports reading from point A to point B in a linear fashion perfectly. It's not great for jumping around, finding something, referring. So having Joshua as really a resource and a bit of a genius, frankly, at understanding how to make this all work, that's what's going to make a difference.
Well, that's terrific. It's going to be exciting times. It's got to be fun for you, since your blog right from the start was aimed at educators, and to have this whole new wave of Amazon aiming at that textbook and education market. I'm going to be really curious to hear how you think it's going.
Well, I think the reports are pretty credible that Amazon will follow the release of the DX with a textbook store, so on and so forth. I mean,
that sounded
July 1 date just has the right little ring to it to me.
Yeah.
And that will be it will be exciting to see how that goes, because one of the things that Amazon did, they didn't have to do it obviously, was to create this the website where you can go up and look at all your notes and clippings. That is a feature that supports education. That is a feature that supports research. That's a feature that turns an otherwise inert print book into something that's really participating in the digital universe. So when I see something like that happen, pretty much without fanfare, when I see something like that happen, I say, you know what, these guys do get it. And, you know, there could be some exciting things coming down the road that, man, we're just not aware of.
I want to thank Will Delamater for the interview and recommend that you check out his blog, which is at edukindle.com. You know, it's not just for teachers and educators, because he's put up some real handy tools, like the one that I featured last week for the tech tip, the Kindlepedia tool. But it's a good place to follow what's happening, especially if you're interested in the educational sector. Time now for this week's Kindle quote. Last August, I bought a copy of the New International Version of the Bible for $9.99, so I had it to consult when a listener's audio comment, which I'm going to play a little later, led me to his own podcast, which was a Bible study. It's an amazing experience to have the entire Bible arrive on your Kindle in less than 60 seconds, but moving around a book this big does pose its challenges. The NIV has a table of contents with links live to each of the books of the Bible, so I was able to navigate to Matthew chapter 6 and find what I was looking for. One formatting problem with this edition is that the words spoken by Jesus, which are probably highlighted in the print version and red, show up as a faded gray on the Kindle version. But in any event, here is a quote beginning at verse 5 of chapter 6 of the Gospel according to Matthew. "And when you pray, do not be like the hypocrites, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues and on the street corners to be seen by men. I tell you the truth, they have received their reward in full. But when you pray, go into your room, close the door, and pray to your Father who is unseen. Then your Father, who sees what is done in secret, will reward you. And when you pray, do not keep on babbling like pagans, for they think they will be heard because of their many words. Do not be like them, for your Father knows what you need before you ask him. This, then, is how you should pray." That's the Kindle quote this week from the New International Version of the Bible. Time now for your comments. Marcy McKenzie passed along this rave review of the DX. She wrote, "After one full day and night with the DX, I have to say that I love it. The screen contrast is much better than K2, and having many more words on a page works much more efficiently for a fast reader. The cursor speed is astounding. I like the fact that the screen orientation changes as needed, but find for reading in bed, it is best to lock the orientation into portrait mode. Propping the bottom edge on a pillow is helpful. In the recliner, the DX works well propped on a pillow. So far, I do not have a cover, so I am reading a naked DX. I will probably get the Tough Love cover when it comes out, if it is similar to their K2 cover. This cover works very well and is relatively lightweight. All of my books downloaded to the Kindle to the DX far more quickly than they did for the K2, and the battery is doing very well, even though it must be indexing 200 books. I have tried PDF documents, children's picture books, newspapers, cookbooks, computer books, novels, etc. All look better on the DX than on the K2. Even Eat This, Not That, which is mainly photos and light print, reads quite well. That book was unreadable on the K2. I do not find the size and weight objectionable. It is still far easier to use and carry than a dead tree book. It feels well balanced and sturdy. The K2 looks very small and puny when sitting next to the DX. I will keep K2 for a while just in case the DX is cumbersome for travel, but so far my Borsabella slipcase in a Cavu Sydney satchel purse is working very well. I am sold. The DX is a good thing. Marcy McKenzie. P.S. I do not find typing objectionable if one puts the DX on a table and types with the tips of your index fingers rather than trying to use your thumbs." Daniel Myers, I'll have to say, you know, in the week since I had my first comments about the DX, I'm finding a similar, being drawn to it, similar to what Marcy's talking about. It's, and a lot of it is the better readability of the font and the type, the fact that it's got that higher contrast than the Kindle 2 does. And it is kind of nice having a larger page. So I don't know. It's growing on me. I'm feeling a little bit disloyal to the Kindle 2, which, as Marcy says, is starting to feel a little bit small, almost like a toy Kindle compared to the real thing. So I don't know. It'd be interesting to see how my perception of it changes over time, as well as others of you out there who are experimenting with it. Daniel Myers emailed regarding the DRM, Digital Rights Management of Books. This is a question which came up on an earlier episode. I kind of figured worst case tools like Calibre could be utilized to convert the DRM book files to a different format or from another format to be read by the Kindle. This is a question, well, what happens if Amazon goes away and what happens to all these books we've bought? So Dan is saying he thinks there'd probably be some ways around that. I think he's probably right. One issue I am noticing, Dan writes, is the on the DX is glare. Since the screen is bigger, seems more spots for a glare to potentially occur. That's not something I've noticed on mine, but I can see how maybe that's an issue. Yisrael Parker emailed a link to one of the many internet reports that Amazon had released the Kindle's source code. He added, "Hi Len, could this create the opportunity for a code-savvy Kindler to add some code to implement folders? ? Good question, Yisrael. I'm wondering if Andrei Pushkin and some of his fellow Kindle code monkeys might take this one on. Joe Clark emailed me asking for advice as follows. I recently lost my Kindle One and need to replace it. Here are my options. I can buy a Kindle One from a friend who bought theirs the same time I bought mine, and she just does not use it. It was an impulse purchase for her. We both got the Oprah discount, and she will sell it to me for what we paid for it originally. Or I can buy a Kindle Two from Amazon. I guess my question is, will I be happier with a Kindle Two than a Kindle One? Which did you like best? I know I also have the option of the Kindle DX, but I mostly read books on it and just not sure it is as good for books because of the wider screen. Sure would appreciate your input, Len. Thanks, Joe Clark, Charlotte, North Carolina." I wrote back that faced with his decision, I'd choose the Kindle 2 for a number of reasons. Joe wrote back after that, said he has ordered one, so I hope he's happy with it. And finally, I have an audio comment from Pastor Mark Pierce, who usually listens to the Kindle Chronicles while riding on his bike, and who is himself an accomplished podcaster from Mansfield, Ohio. 3 years ago, at age 52, he retired from a career in financial services and entered the pastorate, taking courses at Ashland Seminary. So he offers this suggestion for using Kindles effectively for reading course material.
One of the really cool Kindle things I thought you might be interested to know, one of my summer courses that I am taking this summer has three different books, and two of them are available on the Kindle and are less costly than what the print version of it is. I have emailed my professor and asked him if it would be possible for him to tell me the reading assignments, not in terms of pages, but in terms of sections. You know, now that we don't have pages on the Kindle, it's kind of difficult to take a look in the syllabus and know exactly what it is that we're supposed to be reading. But I am excited that I can at least get the books and read them on my Kindle instead of carrying around a heavy book. So one side thing that I guess schools are going to have to do is start thinking in terms of reading assignments, not just in terms of pages, but in the way Kindle keeps track of it. Anyway, there's a comment for you. Thank you so much for your work, and I sure look forward to hearing future episodes.
Thanks for the comment, Mark. This is a non-political, non-denominational podcast, but if you happen to be looking for a good Bible study audio podcast of under 10 minutes an episode, I can recommend Mark's Church Requel audio podcast, which I checked out from the iTunes store. My inspiration for this week's Kindle quote came from his episode 144 titled Our Daily Bread. Like Mark, I don't recommend sending an audio comment in while you're biking, but if you find yourself in a safe place with something to say, please feel free to follow Pastor Mark's example and call my comments line at 206-666-2713. It's like a regular phone message line, so you can leave a comment, listen to it, re-record it till you get it the way you want it. And then I do a little trimming and try to, you know, make everything sound great, which Mark's comments sounded great to begin with. You can also email me at podchronicles@gmail.com or leave a comment on the show notes page at thekindlechronicles.com. If you'd like to be included in what I call the Kindled Spirits email alert list, please drop me an email at podchronicles@gmail.com. That's a list. I send people on that list an email the moment I've uploaded a new episode, as well as occasional alerts on breaking news and questions related to sometimes interviews that I'm going to do. I'll send out a request for help to that list. So if you'd like to be part of that, just send me an email requesting me to add you to the list. Also, if you can't wait to buy an ebook reader that does trigonometry, please feel free to place your DX or your Kindle 2 order by clicking on my Amazon Associates button at thekindlechronicles.com. You won't pay any more than if you start your order at amazon.com, but if you start at my show notes page on that Associates button, I will receive a modest commission that helps defray hosting and other costs related to putting out the podcast. I saw a big jump in the RSS subscribers to my podcast this week, and it may have something to do with listeners who have taken the time to leave a review of my podcast at the iTunes store, which is where most people find the podcast. You can find me at the iTunes store simply by searching for Kindle and then looking in the search results in the podcast category. I want to thank Bob Hare and Almac One, who left much appreciated reviews of the podcast there last week. Music for my podcast is Ramonk by Eval Monegat on the Variations in Time, a Jazz Perspective CD by Public Transit Recording, courtesy of IODA PromoNet. This is Len Edgerly from downtown Denver for the Kindle Chronicles, reminding you to read different. I really appreciate your taking the time to listen to my podcast. Have a great day. Bye.